It's after 4 o'clock. I'm Mary Lucia, and I'm joined by Henry Rollins, who is in town to perform tonight at Wits. Hello, Henry.
Hello.
You know, you're here to perform at Wits, and you're going to be hilarious. It's going to be great, but it's a sad, sad day in this country today with everything that's happened in the news. I don't know if you've been able to follow everything because you've been busy, obviously, at the theater prepping for your show tonight.
I have been following it as best I could, you know, by watching the news.
It's, you know, I'm sort of speechless, and yet when you're doing a radio show, I mean, we work at a news organization, but we're the rock station, and it's hard to, everything doesn't sort of feel trivial and just sort of unimportant. You know, here's the next song from CeeLo Green, and yet, you know, you want to humanize the situation, and yet it's still too hard to make sense of it.
True, but there's a great need for some normal, and so the best thing... This is just my opinion.
Yeah.
The best thing for everyone to do in their capacity, you, me, this station, tonight at our performance, is to do what they were going to do on their schedule earlier that day before this awful occurrence happened. And so the last thing you want is for the station to go dark or for the Wits performance to be canceled. Because all these good people, they want the radio to be on.
Yeah.
They want a show to go to. And... So I think the best course of action, and I've been in a situation or two like this where you're going to go on stage and perform right around the time something completely awful has happened. And it's almost insulting to the event, to human life, and to anyone who has any feeling about this to go out and be happy or to laugh or to rock out. But you have to.
Yeah.
To provide that thing for those people at that time.
You know, are you big in social media? Are you on Twitter and Facebook a lot?
Twitter, yes. Facebook, never. I don't even know how it works.
Really?
I got so many people writing me, and I write them back. I meet them all the time. My audience is my social network, and so I don't need the commercialized one. I got one all of my own.
Yeah. Well, today, I mean, obviously today it's been nothing but gun talk, and it's, you know, it's such a hot button issue right now. And the president did give, here we have just a little recap of it, and it was very emotional. He spoke, and I have it with the sound off, of course, but of course he was saying, I'm speaking to you as your president, I'm speaking to you as a parent. And he was very emotional about it. It was very brief, and I can't wait to get home and hear exactly what he said.
I watched it twice, actually.
Okay, can you tell me what he said?
Well, he said tonight the whole country's heart is broken, that I react to this as your president, but also as a parent. All of us are going to hug our children a little more tightly tonight. And then on two different occasions, tears came out of his eyes, and he cleared them off with an index finger and kept going. You know, he's a solid guy. But he's not made of stone.
Right.
And so he handled it with the greatest sense of decorum and without really saying thank you or anything. He just exited the stage off stage left and walked down through the door down the hallway. It was, you can tell it affected him deeply.
Yeah.
And why wouldn't it? And this is one of those situations, unfortunately, it should be nonpartisan. However, going on the internet almost immediately, it became a partisan issue. And you're talking about the deaths of countless young people, completely innocent. And as one of the hottest button topics that America has, the Second Amendment, and in my opinion, the misreading of it. It's one sentence, two commas, two clauses. It's not all that hard to get your head around.
Right.
Although no one has been able to define for me, to my satisfaction, what the definition of a well-regulated militia is. And that's the first words of the Second Amendment, a well-regulated militia being necessary to the security of a free state. The right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. I think I got it right. And so no gun lover has been able to define the militia clause to me with any satisfaction on my end. So there's going to be the inane arguments, well, if all the kids were armed, dot, dot, dot. And,
right.
And so it's a bigger issue than the Second Amendment. This country has to assess its... we have to take a real pulse reading of what we're going through in this country, because guns have always been accessible. It's not the access to guns that started this. There's something deeper and that gets at the heart of America. So these are discussions that need to be had nationally. They also need to be had locally. Because this is a small town it happened in. This is a human that did it. It's not someone from some creature from another planet. So all of this change and all of these discussions must be had on the local level, in churches, in schools, anywhere. Local politicians should be on this, editorials. Anyone who can weigh in should weigh in.
And I think that it's also brought up a really interesting point about mental health issues and whether or not, you know, the screening process to obtain a gun and a license to carry a gun, does it go hand in hand with someone's mental capacities? And the thing is it easier to get a gun than it is to get mental health help? And, you know, you can't force someone to get mental health help. But, you know, is it easier to get a gun than it is to get help?
True. I think what could be helpful is if more people realized that health, mental health help was available. And Dr. Drew Pinsky is a buddy of mine. He was on CNN today with Wolf Blitzer, and he said something. He said, these people are here to help you. Law enforcement's here to help you. And mental health people are here to help you. Utilize them. And so perhaps what part of the American identity is that we are rugged, we are brutal, or we are, you know, able to just get through anything. And we're tough like that. And we are. We're incredibly resilient people. However, sometimes we break down. It's hard for an American to ask for help.
Yeah.
Very, very difficult. And so when we need that help, it's hard for us to say, well, sometimes I don't always work all that well. And so sometimes there's some denial. And sometimes that denial leads to something going undiagnosed.
Yeah. No, it's a great point. And with that, I think we'll take a break and then we'll come back and we'll chat some more. I've got Henry Rollins here in the studio. This is Muse on the Current. There's music from Muse on the Current. I'm talking to Henry Rollins here. He's in town to do Wits tonight at the Fitzgerald Theater. And we were talking about the school shooting, of course, because it's impossible not to. But we were just talking a little bit off the air about this 24-year-old shooter. We're going to be clearly in the next days and weeks and months finding out more about him and more about his psyche and more about him as a person and perhaps what he's been talking about, who he's been talking to. And you had a really interesting point, Henry, about that.
Yeah, obviously I have no more information than anything I've seen. Here's my theory. My theory is in the next several days or perhaps weeks, you're going to be getting testimonials from people who knew this guy, who hung out with him, went to shows with him, roommates, ex-girlfriends, boyfriends, whatever it is, who will say things like, yeah, he talked about doing something like this about a year ago and we all just laughed it off. Or he kept mentioning that he bought himself a gun and that he was going to kill his mother and take out a button. You know, he's was telegraphing this for quite a while.
Mm-hmm.
I bet you're going to find out that he had talked about it and someone will make some stunning testimonial about this. And you'll have to ask this person, where were you? Why didn't you reach out? Well, I thought he was kidding. Well, he said it three times. How can you think he's kidding? Well, I don't want to talk to the cops about it and start it. Well, why not? And so it goes from everything to you and I looking out for one another that Abraham Lincoln fairly begged us to do, speech after speech. But then it also goes to First Amendment issues of freedom of speech. What? I make a joke, you call the cops on me? Where did my freedom of speech go? And that means every shock jock in the morning now has to watch his or her P's and Q's. And that's also not the American way. Restraint is not what we do. And so this begs communities to act like communities, look out for one another, listen to one another, and be there for one another. Not always the easiest thing to do in a down economy, in a place, in a time where people are go, go, go. I don't have time to listen to you. I don't have time to reach out to law enforcement or some mental wellness and health person because I don't even know that phone number.
Right.
Perhaps now this should be a lesson. Hopefully all these adults and children dying today will not be in vain. This should start conversations, not end them. And the conversation should have a positive end. More listening, more community, more you and I looking out for one another, not looking at each other with suspicion or contempt, but with concern and community.
Yeah. I mean, perhaps that is a fine line with some people. It's like, when do you take someone seriously and when do you think, oh, he's goofing off. He's, you know, he's just being silly.
But you watch. There's someone had this guy, a 24-year-old, it's very hard for a 24-year-old to contain his or herself. You know, when you're young, it's all expository. It's me, me, me. So you're talking about yourself. This guy had a roommate who eventually, I'm sure, will get a lot of questions put to this. I don't know if it's a guy or a gal, but a lot of questions are going to be put to this person. You might find out that that person knew that the shooter had a gun, knew when the shooter got a gun, saw several rounds loaded into an apartment, if that's what was being rented. This is a lot of, you know, this went on without the roommate not knowing one single thing.
Right.
Really?
Right.
And again, I have nothing with which to back this up, but I bet you there was an indicator of the behavior and the action that was carried out today that was broadcasted and telegraphed days, weeks, or months before.
And as you said, he lived in Hoboken, and it's not a huge city. It's not a huge community.
No, and everyone hangs out there, and people knew this guy. And so I'm not trying to assign blame.
No.
I'm just saying that if you want to have this never happen again, and obviously I think everyone's on board with that. This is not a partisan issue. No one wants to see this ever happen again anywhere in the world. And so one of the ways you prevent that is you listen. Put it this way. If one of my staff came into my office for days and weeks saying, I'm going to get a gun, I'm going to kill those people, immediately I would say, okay, are you kidding? No, I'm not. I'm really mad. Okay, we need to talk. Mm-hmm. And then I would have called somebody. Mm-hmm. I really would have. And I meet a lot of people who are pretty intense. They tell me a lot of things about themselves.
I'm sure they do.
And I have gone on behalf of them to agencies and actually connected that person to an agency. So this is, in my opinion, what you do. And these people, I did not know them. They contacted me. I'm having these problems. And I said, I got a phone number for you. And I said, hold on, let me contact this guy, make sure I can get this to go through. And I got these people liaised. And these people were able to get help. I did that.
That's incredible.
Because I figured, what, you don't leave the guy hanging. The problems these people were describing to me were, I'm going to take them at their word. If they're winding me up, I'll just have to be the brunt of that joke. But I'm not going to let it sit there.
Well, as a performer, I mean, you're clearly reaching out to people on certain levels that they trust you enough to tell you these things, and then you're taking the responsibility of taking it seriously, mm-hmm. which is commendable. And like I said, I'm sure there are plenty of people who hear stories like you hear that don't follow up and don't follow through or do anything about it, for that matter.
Right, and could today's event been avoided? It's not for me or you or anyone to say. All we can say is it did happen, and we need to get busy on making sure it never happens again. And so there are multiple sides to that argument. Well, if everyone was armed, ... And that's just, to me, that's not the direction I'd want to go in. Again, it boils down to you and I knowing each other's names. If you have a neighbor, you find out who they are. You exchange phone numbers. Everyone kind of breaks down a few walls, reaches over, finds out the other guy's not that bad, or is.
Yeah.
and maybe that needs to be addressed. And so I live in a neighborhood where there's burglaries. And my place, years ago, I walked in on the guy.
Oh, man.
And so I sent – it's how I met a lot of my neighbors. I put a letter in everyone's mailbox and said, look, here's what happened to me. Here's my address, name, and phone number. If anyone wants to talk to me about what happened – and boy, that whole neighbor is a one long road. Everyone – we started exchanging stories, and you find out that – crime is alive and well in our neighborhood, and we now all know each other.
Yep.
And a lot of people where I live have very strict schedules. 8 a.m., they're off to the thing, and the whole house is empty because they're working at Warner Brothers or whatever they're doing. Very go-go-go part of Los Angeles I live in. And those houses are wide open. Or there's a nanny with two kids, great vulnerability and human life at stake. And once the neighborhood got a little closer, you found out that your neighbors are very, very nice people. And they have names and phone numbers and email addresses. And now we have like a little bulletin thing that goes around. And it's not the worst thing.
What did you do when you walked in on the burglar?
I immediately started watching his hands for movement because he had no weapon in his hand at the time. He tried to convince me that he was my cable guy. I told him I had satellite. And then he asked if he should leave the same way he came in. And I said, I guess, not knowing how he got there.
Right.
And he ran. So I called the cops. And he fits the description of a man who had been holding up people in the neighborhood. Because I was able to describe him down to the color of leather on his watch band.
Oh, dear God.
I stared at him.
Yeah.
And we had this insane conversation. And thankfully, he split because I don't own a gun, and I don't know how I don't really know how I would protect myself in that situation except by saying, you know, get out of my house. But it was noon, and I happened to walk back into my place to pick a video up to take it back to my office, and I encounter this man, and so I immediately, after calling law enforcement, I put this out to my neighbors. To not tell them would have been a great disservice. Because they're all innocent, going to work, yep, living their lives. I happen to be lucky enough to repel this guy in a nonviolent way. I'm not going to not tell anybody. I told everyone immediately. And I said, look, pass this on. I don't know all of you, you know. And because in that one place, I was gone a lot. I go on tour. I'm not there right now. I'm here with you.
Yeah, you are.
And so I don't have a family. My place is extremely exposed. I moved out of that place eventually. I live on the same road, just in a different location. But it was one of those very sobering moments where you realize how vulnerable you are and that you need your neighbors and that there is a need. And so you're not the rugged individualist cut from the bolt of Ayn Randian cloth. You are actually a component part of your neighborhood. And I don't mind that very much. I like being part of something.
I think people are afraid of community just because they're so protective of their privacy. And I understand that
to a certain degree.
You know, I want my privacy, but I also want my neighbors to know that I work a certain amount of hours. And if they see a guy going through my window, chances are he's not hooking up my cable.
And we are dynamic creatures in that we can entertain more than one level of communication, more than one level of discourse. We can handle that. We're not either or as a species, and we shouldn't be either or in a community. We should be multi-level. Yeah, I've got my privacy time, but I'm also a neighborhood person too. Mm-hmm. And I know the names of the kids next door, but I'm not going to babysit them because I need my weekends to myself. We can work on all of these levels. It doesn't have to be black or white or, you know, and so I think we must think more dynamically. Again, this young person, this shooter, this 24-year-old citizen, there's no way he did not give some indicators of what was to come. No one can work that quietly because and I'm only saying this because in the weeks and days and weeks resulting in all of these other things that have been happening, these gun homicides that have been happening in the last few years, that's what you find out. You find out that the guy was posting it on Facebook, that the local therapy person at the school said, I was worried about this kid for 2 years. Like, really? Yeah. And there's a file on the kid in the high school. Great. And so more than one person knew, and they really knew. And so you might find out that this was the case in this situation. And if it was, I'm not saying shame on anyone. I'm just saying, like, wow, here's a lesson. Let's learn it.
Yeah. No, I appreciate your candor and your opinion. And again, Henry Rollins in town tonight to do wits. What are you going to do tonight? What do you got in store?
That's the interesting part. I have no idea. Mm-hmm. And I asked Tim, the fellow driving me around beautiful St. Paul. I said, there was nothing I could prepared myself for, right? And he said, yeah. I said, because I looked at the materials and there's nothing to memorize. He said, no. I said, well, I just ride the wild. He said, as best you can.
Yeah.
And so last night I started getting nervous in that I like to be hyper prepared, and there's really nothing for me to prepare for except, I guess, have a good attitude. And I flossed today.
That's good.
And then so hopefully I will be able to keep up with the marvelous cast of characters at this thing I'll be encountering tonight. But quite honestly, I don't have a great deal of knowledge of what I'm heading into hours from now.
Did you watch any of the Hurricane Sandy benefit show?
No, I heard about it. In that I read who's on the bill. Quite honestly, if I can't be part of it, it's not an event I would like to watch. It's only an event that I would like to help out with or help promote. Mm-hmm. And so as far as watching it, Paul McCartney playing Nirvana songs, I must say, I'm not remotely curious. I'm not to say either entity wasn't talented. They're both very talented. I'm just saying, I don't care. I care about the people who were affected by Sandy.
Yeah.
I care about the people who lost lives and property. And I'm glad that all these big rock stars did this cool event. And I hope they raised a ton of money because it's needed. I toured through every Sandy afflicted state in the last several weeks.
Yep.
And some of the shows were almost canceled. A lot of empty seats and sold out shows because the people did not have the electricity with which to print out their tickets, nor the gasoline to get to the show. So I got a lot of letters from Trenton, from parts of Delaware. They couldn't make the Dover show. Henry, I was trapped in a dark, cold house. I can't get my ticket money back. Can you hook me up with this show? My next tour, when I get to the East Coast next time, we're going to have to take care of these people because I'm not going to let them hang. And I can't give them their money back. It's not really for me to do. It's for the promoter. So I have to depend on that person's integrity. Okay. And so I'm going to probably have to have some ridiculous guest lists just taking people at their word. I couldn't get to the show. I can't, because that's my community, my audience. They're my people, if you will. And so I'm not going to let them hang. But no, I didn't watch the thing, but I'm glad they did it.
I don't want to be paranoid, but I'm always curious with these really, really large scale things. Like, where exactly, how is the money distributed?
If I were you, I wouldn't worry about that too much in that the level of goodwill going into these things, yeah, you might have a bad apple in the food chain that gets the money from A to B. That happens with any NGO as far as like dollar, a dollar going in. How much food does that create? World Food Program, Doctors Without Borders, Red Cross, these are high integrity outfits. I do a lot of NGO stuff, and I'm actually in countries with them, like in Burma, in parts of Africa. And I hear the morning talk at the breakfast room, and you get the skinny on some of these. Some are good, some are bad. In an event like this, I think it's so highly scrutinized. I don't think the money will be diverted back into the pockets of rock stars. None of the people performing that night needed money. They got money. So they did this because, and they're all insanely busy. So they had to say no and move a lot of things around on their schedule. Trust me, they're all really busy. And they did this. So I wouldn't be paranoid about if the money's going to go to the right place. When it gets to the local level where those monies go, then you're dealing with a bunch of states, a bunch of municipalities, and you're going to have to cross your fingers. But even on that level, I think essentially people are good. And the money's going to go to the right place. On behalf of the performers and the people in production, I wouldn't worry about that at all.
Right. Arden, my final question to you is, where did you get your SAG card? From what, doing what?
Good question. I forget what film it was, but my manager called me. He said, I have great news for you. I said, what? She says, you're a member of SAG. You're in the Screen Actors Guild. I said, what does that mean? She said, are you kidding? You are golden. And it was apparently a big damn deal. They don't just hand those out. And so that was in 1990-something. And I was told to be in a celebratory mood. And I said, okay. And I only understand now as an adult, past 50, what that means.
So pay your dues twice a year.
Yeah, I pay my dues whenever I'm told to. And but I forget what film it was. Perhaps it was the film Heat.
Okay.
They said, well, he's serious now. He's getting beaten up by Al Pacino.
Henry Rollins, thank you so much for stopping by. And tonight is the show at the Fitzgerald Theater. It is Wits. Again, it's always a pleasure to talk to you and to hear anything that you have to say. Come by and see us anytime.
I will. Thank you.
All right. This is Friends.